The scriptures say, Yagna, Gyan, and Tapa must not be given up. Even if you are a renunciate, even if you are a sannyasi, these three we have to practice. Yagna, Gyan, and Tapa. It's not only mentioned in the 17th chapter, but Krishna will again mention in the 18th chapter also the importance of these three. So what is yagna? We had done that last week. Yagna is dedicated activities, any activity that is done, getting people involved, or even an individual activity which is dedicated to the higher. And as we had studied last week, yagna or activities can be of three types: sattvic, which is activities that are done because it is the right thing to do without regard of what I will get out of it, doing your best and dedicating it to the higher, that is sattvic. And then rajasic, we had studied last week, is activities done with a selfish motive. What will I get out of it? How will I benefit? And then that leads to passion, anger, greed and all that. And then tamasic activities, we had studied last week, tamasic yagna are activities done without any right method, without following the right method, without following the scriptures, without sharing, you know, giving to others, selfish activities, not even considering the scriptures and done with the lowest motive are tamasic. And then gyan is covered throughout the Bhagavad Gita. You know, gyan is something that every verse of the Bhagavad Gita is full of knowledge. But we'll talk a little bit about that today when we talk about Swadhyaya. So they are saying that studying should never be given up, even no matter how old you are. You must always keep your mind active, learn new things, read, you know, take up some challenging, maybe learn a new language, learn to play an instrument, read the newspaper, take up some challenging puzzles. So the brain has to be kept active, because they say if you don't use it, you lose it. So the way to keep your body active, it obviously is by exercise, and that is emphasized. But even the mind, people forget, especially after they retire, they say, now I don't need to do anything. But then the mind very quickly deteriorates. So that's why they say jnana should be never given up, even no matter how old you are. Read something, listen to something good, especially the scriptures, and meditate. Meditation is a very good way to keep the brain active, because in meditation, all the mental neurons are activated, and they are, you know, there is a lot of positive effects of meditation. They have shown that it creates new telomeres, even in the chromosomes in the brain. It creates new connections, so there is a lot of benefit of meditation. Today we will talk about tapa, and I'll introduce basically tapa today a little bit, and then we'll talk about different kinds of tapa. So what is tapa? People, when they think of tapas or tapa, they think of, you know, yogis standing on one leg in the Himalayas, you know, for months and years, as Vimalji said, not bathing, because he has, you know, doesn't go anywhere, just stands in one place, and whether it's raining or snowing or heat or cold, he doesn't move. And then after years, Bhagwan appears and says, what do you want, my son? And then, you know, whatever he wants. And if that person is a genuine yogi, then he will ask for, you know, positive. But if he's a rakshas or somebody, a demon who has been meditating for years, why? Because he wants more power. And that's what we see Hiranyakashyapu and Ravan and all those, you know. So people get afraid the moment you mention tapas. No, that's not for me. I don't want to, you know. But tapas is, Gurudev says, is nothing but redirected energy. What happens is that we waste a lot of energy in doing useless work or overwork or just working without reason, you know, moving around and arranging things and organizing. Or people take on more responsibility they can handle, work late hours, you know, workaholics. They don't need to work as hard, but they say, I don't know anything, I don't have anything else to do, so I just work. A lot of them don't want to come home, and then that's why, that's another reason. That's what somebody said. A person whose husband doesn't come home, that means he overworks. Anyway, so that's one issue. But or excessive speech, you know, just talk uselessly. Just talk without pick up the phone and talk to somebody for an hour. And we'll talk about speech later on today, excessive speech. And that wastes a lot of energy. Or excessive thinking. You know, just thinking and worrying about things they have no reason to worry about. What's going to happen to my grandchildren? Abhi, you are a grandfather. You are on Vanaprastha. Why you are so worried? Let his parents take care of him. Wherever you are asked for advice or what's going to happen to the nation. Oh God, you know, the country is going down. Or what's going to happen to the ISIS, you know, you read the news, but unnecessarily worrying. And then any time there is any incident anywhere in the country, the sales of guns go up. The whole country starts buying guns. I need to buy guns to protect myself. The stores run out of ammunition. Actually, the gun manufacturers are benefiting the most with all this fear. You know, there's so much terrorism. Nothing. There are a few incidents. But what happens is these incidents were always there. But with TV and internet, it multiplies. Somebody got shot in Barsano for whatever that is. We don't even know where that country is. But because the terrorism is in the headline in all the newspapers, you think, oh God, you know, the whole world is. So we waste a lot of energy in useless activity, useless speech, useless thinking. Thinking also consumes a lot of energy, especially worry. So what tapas does is that you conserve that energy. You sit in one place and you practice some amount of self-control, self-denial, not self-punishment, but some amount of self-control. Okay, I'll sit for half an hour and meditate. Or I'll do some yoga, or I'll, you know, do some prayers, or I'll do some fast, you know, on Ekadashi or Shivratri. So then you bring your mind to one attention, then when that mind is conserved, the physical energy is conserved, when that is redirected in a positive way, that is called tapas. So when I save this energy, then what do? I use that energy for my own spiritual growth. So I may evolve, so I may become a better physically, I may become mentor better spiritually. Or I use that energy to serve the world. So that energy which is conserved and used for my own spiritual upliftment is called tapas. But a lot of times people start tapas just because others are doing it. You know, Swamiji is doing it, so I also have to do it. Or somebody comes and tells, you know, this is you should do. And you are not convinced, but you start doing it. And then you start, you know, forcing yourself. And then it creates a lot of resentment. So I have to be convinced of the benefit of tapas, that this is going to help me to evolve. And mostly the benefit of tapas should be spiritual. It should be for spiritual upliftment so that I may get closer to God and get closer to God within. I may get that. So I redirect the energy, and when I'm convinced, then what happens is your mind gets connected. And when the mind is connected to the higher, then that person's energy becomes boundless. We have examples of Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, how hard he used to work. He used to sleep 3 hours. We see all these Swamiji, Swami Ishwarananda and Vimalji and all, how much he has a full-time job, and he worked on Thursday till 12, then he caught a flight, came here at 6:30, and 7 o'clock he was delivering a beautiful discourse. And then, so we see how hard these people work. Why? Because they are connected with the higher, they are connected with the Lord. And then their actions, Vivekananda, how he traveled even at a young age, how much he accomplished. Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji, look at by age, he only lived 32 years. And how much they accomplished. Why? Because they have this energy of tapas. Not only that, look at a 2-year-old child. Now, if you have a 2-year-old boy in the house, you know, the mother, father, grandfather, everybody is running around and they can't control him. He has so much energy. And they say, where does he get this energy from? You know, he has a little bit of milk, maybe little cookies, and where is he? And the whole family gets tired running after him, but he's not. Why? Because at that age, they have no ego. They are connected with the Lord. They are still one with the Lord. They still have, that's why you ask him, Raju, you know, he will say, Raju wants milk. Raju wants to play. He won't say I, because that I, that ego has not yet come. He still talks of himself or herself in the third person. And even the parents say, you know, does Raju want milk or does... So at that age, the ego has not come. The child is still connected with the Lord because he just recently left Bhagwan and came on this earth. So when the mind is connected to the higher, and when it is withdrawn from the world, then such a person has tremendous energy and can accomplish great deeds. And that's why tapas can also give us great siddhis, you know, great powers. And I'll tell the story of Rishabhdev, and then we'll start the verse. Rishabhdev, as you know, was the first Tirthankar of the Jain faith, the first prophet, you can say. And then there were 24, and then Bhagavan Mahavir was the 24th, the last one. And that's when Jainism became more organized. So Rishabhdev was such a great tapasvi, such a great yogi. For years he did so much tapas. He actually used to keep a stone in his mouth so that he didn't talk to anybody. Now again, not talking, we'll talk about that also in speech. But some people forcefully make themselves not talk, but their mind is running. But his mind was so peaceful, you know, that he didn't feel the need to talk. And it is said that he got so much power that he could perform all kinds of miracles, all kinds of siddhis. But he never took up any of them. He never did any of those things. He never performed any miracles, never used the siddhis. And people say, why not? You know, if you have siddhis, why not use it for the benefit of society? And actually, Parikshit, you know, Parikshit, the Raja Parikshit, who was Arjuna's grandson, who heard Bhagavat from Shukdev Muni. That's a different story. I won't go into that. So he asks Shukdev Muni, because Shukdev talks about, you know, this Rishabhdev was a great... So Parikshit said, why didn't he use his siddhis, his powers for the benefit of society? So Shukdev Muni gives a very beautiful answer. He says these siddhis are worldly powers that come through tapas. But when you use them, when you constantly practice them, what happens is it depletes your spiritual energy. Not only that, it creates the ego in the mind that, you know, I help so many people. So even you may be a realized saint or a master, a Jivan Mukta, but the mind should never be taken for granted. So it's not that Rishabhdev didn't help. After he realized the truth, he became a great saint, a great sage. He spoke and a lot of people benefited from his wisdom, from his presence. But he did not want to show off his powers because that's not what... So that's what Rishabhdev... So that's the power of tapas, and that's how tapas should be utilized. To conserve energy, direct it for the benefit of the self and for others, but constantly be alert and watchful not to go back to the old ways. And we find that people who display siddhis, sometimes they become very arrogant and people start worshipping them and people start... So that's why they say that one should be careful. So this was a brief introduction of what is tapas. We can now start the verse, and then if people have any questions, we'll discuss them. Verse number 14, which... Now tapas has been covered at three levels. They said tapas can be at the body level, at the speech level, or at the mental level. One of the authors I was reading on this verse, he says actually everything is mental. They are all connected. Because when your mind is peaceful, then your body will be peaceful, then your speech will be peaceful. So the body, speech and mind are all connected. So ultimately the tapas is at the mental level. You have to control your mind, then only your body will be controlled, then only your speech will be controlled. But Bhagavan Sri Krishna has covered them separately. So let us cover the body first. What is shariram tapa? What is Shariram Tapa? Verse number 14. Devadvij Guru Prag, Devadvij Guru Pragnya. Pujanam Shaucham Arjavam. Brahmacharya Mahimsacha. Shariram Tapa Uchyate. So he says, what is Shariram Tapa? What is tapas or austerity at the body level? Austerity is at the body level. So Shariram Tapa Uchyate. What is it? Dve Deva Dvija Guru Pragnya. So these are four people who are pujanam, who are worthy of worship. So who are the ones that we should worship? We'll talk about what is the meaning of worship. But who are the ones that we should worship? Deva, God. You know, that everybody agrees. There's no problem. Deva means, and whatever God, you know, is your Ishta Devta, whether it's Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Ganpati or Mother Goddess, Durga, Saraswati. So you should worship. When Dvija is the twice born. So the Brahmins are called Dvija, but Dvija means twice born. Even in Christianity, they say born again Christian. So Dvija is the twice born. Guru, of course, is the teacher, spiritual teacher. And Pragnya. Pragnya is the wise one, the wise person. These are worthy of worship. Now worship, people think worship means Guru's there, I go and massage his feet. Or God, I just go offer some flowers, do the aarti, and then it is done. My puja is done. Or I light a candle in the church. I mean, that is good. I'm not saying that one shouldn't do aarti or light a candle or go to the temple. Or if a guru comes, you know, serve him, maybe offer him food and, you know, or take care of the physical needs. But that is not enough. People think that is enough. You know, subah hurriedly, I do my aarti and I'm gone. That's it. I'm done for the day. Or Sunday I went to the church or I went to the temple. Bhagawan, look, I'm here. So, you know, we sign the attendance register. God is happy, I'm here, and that's it. No, that's not true worship. Or guru even. The worship is to tune your mind with the teacher. To tune your mind with the wise people. Dvija, with the people who are enlightened. So people who are wise, people who are teachers, people who are evolved souls, worship means tune your mind to them. So sit in front of them, learn from them, and emulate them. See, what happens is that in our case, who are our heroes? Most of the time, the heroes are either film stars, you know, or sports stars, or as we grow older, we emulate, you know, business people who are very successful, who are very rich, or politicians, you know, who have become very successful. Now, I'm not saying that their success is not hard-earned, you know, to be successful in sports or politics or business needs a lot of effort. But, and especially for youngsters, you know, it is the sports people, you know, Michael Jordan or Joe Montana or, you know, the newer, you know, quarterbacks, Russell Wilson or Cam Newton. So they have big posters of them or, you know, boys have big posters of girls, you know, all these models and film stars. And so what happens is that these people have achieved a lot. I'm not saying that they haven't achieved, but they have achieved only in one particular field. Like he may be a great football player and he may have won the Super Bowl and all. But if you look at his personal life, it is a mess. You know, the friends he hangs out with and the drinks and drugs and parties and all. So they are not all round. Same thing about film stars. They may be very successful on the screen, but their personal life is a mess. They have had 2, 3, 4 broken marriages and they are all involved in all different things, or even this, you know, rich businessmen or politicians, they may have achieved success in one particular field. So the true heroes should be the saints, because if you look at their life, or the prophets, or the wise people, their life is all-round development. If you look at a saint's life, it is blameless. Because physically, mentally, intellectually, in all ways, because they are connected with the Lord, they are as close to perfect as you can find. Of course, as long as we are in this human body, no one will be perfect. And they will may have some little, you know, mental problems, minor ones, some little anger or some little, but by and large, they are as close to perfection as you can find in the human body. So they said, make your heroes the saints. Look, read the life of Tukaram, or read the life of Saint Francis of Assisi, or read the life of Shankaracharya, or Buddha, or Mahavir. So when you see how these saints lived, Ramakrishna Paramhansa, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, how they lived their life, how they conducted themselves, and reading the life is very inspiring. Actually, there was a saying, I think I might have told that before. As a child, I used to read it. And my mother used to tell me, he says, lives of great men all remind us we can make our life sublime and departing leave behind us footprints on the sand of time, the sands of time. So when you read the life of such great people, you realize I can also be that. And I can also leave my footprints in the sands of time. So that's what they say, that make them your heroes, make them your role models. And we'll do each one separately. So Dvija is the twice born. I think I didn't write that. But what is twice born? You know, we say, what do you mean by twice born? Or what do they mean by born again Christian? When they say twice born, Brahmins call themselves Vija, but truly to be a twice born is, one time we are all born from the mother's womb, so that is the first birth. But the second birth is when an individual, because we are all in the prison of our body, mind and intellect, our physical pleasures, our mental attachments, our intellectual pride and arrogance. So all of us are caught in this prison or in this body, or in this covering of the body, mind and intellect. So an individual who, while remaining in the body, mind and intellect, gets connected with the higher, becomes one with the Lord, and then functions through the same body, mind and intellect, but using them like an instrument, using them like an equipment, without getting attached, seeing that, okay, my body is an instrument I need to use, my mind and intellect, but I am not the body, doesn't get attached. I actually asked Vimalji, because we in the Atma Bodh, we are doing a verse, which says a person who gives up the physical, mental and intellectual conditionings, then merges in the self, in the Lord, just as water merges into water, like if you pour water in a river, It instantly merges. After a while, you can't tell which is the water I poured and which was the river. So similarly, this individual who has gone beyond the conditionings of the body, mind and intellect becomes one with the Lord. And you cannot distinguish. He looks like the Lord himself walking and talking on earth. So I asked him. So he actually gave very good answer. I was picking him up from the airport. So just thought, you know, I should ask him. That's what with these Mahatmas, don't waste the opportunity. You get a chance, ask them, instead of asking them about, talking to them about sports or politics, or ask them these questions, because they are a storehouse of information. And so I asked him, so he says three, four things he said. He said, how do you give up the conditioning? One, I said, you know, that use it as an equipment. I am not the body, mind and intellect. I am this equipment. That's number one. Number two, he says, think of everything as God's work. Think of everything as God's work. It's not my work. And so constantly when you remember that. And third is be a witness. Be a witness and watch. Watch your body. Watch your mind. So when you function as a witness, when you have no doership, that God is working through me. I have not done anything. In fact, in the Rajasic, one of the things is, thinking that I am the doer, I did this, I did that, and people get so proud. You know what? I have done so much. No, the Lord has worked through me. I had the opportunity to help people. It was the Lord. Otherwise, we get proud and arrogant. You know, I help so many people. I do so much. No. So when you do that, when you give up the ego, when you function as the Lord's instrument and be a witness and watch the then slowly you get out of the prison of the BMI, and that is called the second birth, where a person giving up the lower gets attached to the higher. So as we said, Guru and Prajna, they are the wise people. And who is a Guru? Spend a couple of minutes talking about Guru. Guru, we say, well, is a spiritual teacher. And the word Gu means darkness, and Ru means one who removes. So Guru, one who removes the darkness of ignorance. And as Vimalji was telling us, he said, a lot of times we don't even know that we are ignorant, or we are living in ignorance, or we are living in darkness. It's only when a Guru you come in contact with, then you realize what a fool I was. All these years I wasted my life. So a true Guru, as opposed to a teacher, like a material teacher, they're also important. I'm not saying that a math teacher or a golf teacher or a tennis teacher or a swimming instructor or an art instructor, they're all important, but they will teach you about the world, how to be a better artist or a better player or a better student, better in science and all that. But a spiritual teacher is the one that will transform your life. See, others will tell you how to function better in the world, and that is good. But a true spiritual guru will create an internal transformation where you become a better person internally and direct your attention to what is important. So that's why guru is different from a teacher. And teacher we have everywhere, including in our car and in our phone. And the guru we have everywhere. It's like the GPS. That's a guru. If you don't follow it, and it's always a lady, right? You have to listen to her. If you don't, you'll end up in some wrong road or wrong somewhere. So we have gurus everywhere, but the true guru is the spiritual teacher. And as we said, real service of the guru is not only helping take care of his needs, but more important is following the advice that the guru. The guru will be happier not by you massaging his feet, but he'll be happier if you follow the instructions, what he has given or she has given. So that is called Deva, Dvija, Guru and Prajna. Prajna are the wise people. So they're all basically similar words. A wise person who is evolved, who has been born again, who has escaped from the bondages of this world, and then who becomes a spiritual teacher. And one of the things about Guru, as opposed to a worldly teacher, is it says in the Upanishad, Shrotriyam Brahma Nishtham. So a true guru should not only be Shrotriyam, not only know the scriptures and be able to give talks and teach, but should also be established in that Brahman, in that truth. And that is a true guru we should look for. Somebody who not only knows the scriptures, but is established in the truth, in Brahman, Brahmanishtham. So that guru or that wise person, we should worship. And as we know, we already did the meaning of worship. And then we talk about Shaucham. Shaucham is purity. Purity or cleanliness is at three levels. First of all, the body should be kept clean. And that we all know, you should bathe and you should keep yourself clean. But we forget that there is two other cleanliness, cleanliness of the environment. If I am truly, purity should not only be of my body and of my, wearing good clothes and looking nice and makeup and all, but my desk should be clean, my closet should be clean, my bedroom, my house. Keeping my environments clean is also part of Shaucham, part of purity. And then more important is cleanliness of the mind. Having positive thoughts, having thoughts of love. What is the dirt of the mind? The dirt of the mind is nothing but kaam, krodh, lobh, mad, moha, matsarya, anger, greed, jealousy, desire, lust. So these negativities should be removed and the mind should become pure. And substitute anger with love, lust with, you know, compassion, selfishness with unselfishness, possessing with sharing. So as you practice the opposite value, so your mind slowly becomes pure, the negativities are removed and the positivity. So that is Shaucham. The next one on the body that Krishna tells us is Arjavam. Arjavam is straightforwardness. And the best example is Arjuna. That's why he got the name Arjuna, because he was very straightforward. Arjavam is straightforwardness. What do they mean? The mind, the speech, and the action are all one. What this person thinks, he speaks and he does. But in our case, you know, we think something else and then, you know, we say something else. I've talked before also. Somebody shows up at the house and you're thinking, are you just Sunday morning, bevkuf chalaya, you know, why is this idiot here on Sunday morning wasting my time? But and you can't say that to him, right? Oh, welcome, you are so, or other thing, you know, you promise somebody, I'll do something and then not do it, not carry it out, or you don't come on, show up on time. You say, I'm going to meet you at 5 o'clock in the evening. You don't show up till 6. That is all Arjavam. Not being prompt, not keeping your promise, not doing what you said you would do. So that is Arjavam, and that is what we need to practice. Be straightforward, be honest. Again, we'll talk about speech, we'll talk about that a little more, about what is, you know, pleasant in speech. It does not mean straightforward, does not mean I hurt others. You know, it doesn't mean that you straight away say whatever you want, even if it is hurtful. We'll talk about that more. But being straightforward, being honest, being prompt, that is Arjavam. And then the next one is Brahmacharyam. Now, Brahmachari, in Hindus, Brahmachari means one who is celibate, who doesn't marry. That's why Hanumanji is called Bala Brahmachari, because he never got married. And so that is all we think, you know, we say, oh, it's a brahmachari hai, you know, that means he's not married. But brahmachari has a lot more meaning than only one who is celibate or one who is not married. It also means a living a life of self-control. At the worldly level, brahmacharya means live a life of self-control, overindulgence in anything, overeating, over drinking, over any, you know, sense pleasures, anything, doing too much of enjoyment is a, so living a life of self-control, living a life of discipline. But more important, what is Brahmacharyam? When in the Gita, what Gurudev says, Brahmani charati iti brahmachari. So who is a true brahmachari whose mind is always in the Lord? Brahmani, in Brahman, in the Lord, he revels. He always plays with that. So one whose mind is always stationed in the higher, how does he do that? By detaching from the lower. As we said, detach from the lower and attach to the higher. Detach from the body, mind, intellect, attaching to the Lord, keep your mind there. You still work. We are not saying that does not mean that once you're attached to the Lord, then you don't do anything. In fact, your actions are more pure. Your actions are more higher because the Lord is working through you. So one whose mind is constantly in the Lord, that person is called a brahmachari. So that is called true brahmachari, is one who's always thinking about the Lord, working for the Lord. Even when he is working, he has no I or my. So that is called brahmachari. Then ahimsa. Now ahimsa, again, is a very misunderstood word. We think ahimsa means turn the other cheek. You know, somebody slapped you on one cheek, so you say, okay, slap me on the other. A saint can do that, maybe. But for you and me, A, it is very difficult. It's not going to happen. B, it's not even practical. Like you are a householder and, you know, your wife is there and the neighbor is harassing your wife. As she passes by, he whistles. Or Now, if you say, I am a practitioner of ahimsa, no, that's not ahimsa. When you know the non-violence, that, oh, let him do whatever he wants. No, you have to protect your family. You know, you have to take care of your family. And if somebody is harassing them, or you see somebody, you know, they give the example, somebody coming with a gun or whatever, you close your door, call the police. You don't allow them to take whatever they want. Or a leader of the country, he cannot say, I am practicing ahimsa, you know, non-violence. And other countries attacking, it's okay, you know, let them. No, that's not, and that's what happened to, that's why the Hindus over the years were enslaved, because we were, had the wrong understanding of ahimsa. A few Muslims came, or a few, you know, Britishers came, and they took over the whole country, because we had, actually this started from Ashoka, even though Ashoka was a great king, but after he converted to Buddhism, he became totally pacifist. You know, the whole country, everybody was becoming Buddhist monks. And so Buddhism, even though it's a good religion, was misunderstood, and everybody started practicing ahimsa, all became monks, and that's why nobody, in fact, that's what happened in Tibet. In Tibet, everybody was a monk. There was no young, they hardly had any soldiers. All young men became monks, and they were asking diksha and begging from people. And so when the Chinese attacked, without shooting a single bullet, they took over the whole country, because there was no one to fight. They just walked in and took huge country like Tibet with so many mountains. They could have fought and kept, the, you know, nobody was there to fight. Aram say they got the whole country, and now through Tibet, they are harassing all the other neighboring countries, Nepal, and Sikkim, and India and all. So ahimsa is, what is ahimsa? So ahimsa is not being a pacifist and letting a person do. Ahimsa is mental. It is mental ahimsa. Gurudev says it very beautifully. He says physical ahimsa is impossible to practice. Think about it. As we are walking, so many insects, you know, we are stepping on. We don't know. As you are driving in the road, how many insects you are stepping on? I mean, when you excrete in the morning and you flush, millions and billions of bacteria you are flushing, and you are killing them, right? So physical ahimsa is impossible. You are at home, especially in the Northeast, we find that suddenly you wake up in the morning, and your kitchen is full of ants. There's like hundreds of ants, you know. You say, I am a true practitioner of ahimsa. Brahman is in the ants also, as it is in me. We are all one. What will happen? They'll take over your closet and your pantry and your cookies, everything in the sugar. They will go into everything. No, you can't practice ahimsa. You have to get out the spray and, you know, destroy them. But while you are doing it, you should not get a mental pleasure out of it. Ah, I'm so glad I'm killing. No, oh Lord, I'm sorry. I know you are in these ants as much as I am, but I am forced to do that. So mental love, even when there is a physical, you like a child, a mother punishes a child, or father disciplines a child. They don't enjoy that. They suffer, you know, but physically they may have to scold him or even spank him, but mentally, they do it out of love, that for this child's betterment, I'm doing it. If I don't, then the child will get spoiled. You know, that is the idea. And that's why they say the child in the first 5 years, you should love. The next 5 years, you should discipline. And then after that, once the child becomes a teenager, he should become your friend. But what people do, especially when those of us who come from India to here, now suddenly we have all, you know, this, everything is available in this country in plenty. So we say, I didn't have this as I was growing up. My son should have everything, or my daughter. So we give them whatever they want, never scold them, never tell them anything. So then you are spoiling the child. You are making the child a dependent, making the child undisciplined. So some amount of discipline, so that is called ahimsa, where you are doing, even appears on the surface that it is not good, and the child will resent it. Oh, you know, you never buy me the video games, you never buy me Nintendos. Why? Because then he'll be playing from morning to night and he won't study. So using to know where to discipline is true ahimsa. So ahimsa is a word that has to be properly understood. It is not a, being a passive doormat, you know, anybody can come and walk over me. No, but standing up for your rights, that's what Krishna tells Arjuna. Even though throughout the Gita, he's talking ahimsa, 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 but he's telling Arjuna that these people are bad and they need to be stopped. If you don't stop them, they will take over the country and the country will all become Kauravas. Everybody will become. So, at the right time, you have to take a stand. Or like Hitler, he was taking over Europe. Now, you could say, oh, we want to practice ahimsa. No. He would have been bad not only for Europe but for the whole world. So America and Russia and everybody stepped in to stop it. So true ahimsa is knowing when to do it, but mentally there should be no hatred. Mentally I should have love, but I may be forced to use some discipline. And so these values that we have studied, they need to be practiced. So that's why the Gita we are studying. So this is where we talk about shariram tapa. These are the things that at the body level is tapas. There's a lot more we can talk, but I would like to give you an opportunity. As long as you have the body, mind and intellect, you are still in the human cage. You have not yet escaped it. So they don't become perfect. So never is not the thing. But they have far more control over their body, mind and intellect. And they're able to, they spend a lot more of their energy in helping, in serving, in studying. And while you and I, most of our energy is spent in, you know, I and my acquiring, possessing, and then maybe a little bit of time for service. So they have, they devote more time. So they have more self-control. Yes. But I wouldn't say never. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, they may also have moments of laziness, moments of anger, moments of frustration where things are not going. But they are very quickly able to come out of it. I've seen Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, when things were not going well, he would scold the people very, very strongly. And he did it not for out of ego, but that this person should improve. What he's doing is not good for him or not good for the growth of the mission. And then instantly, the next moment, he would be smiling. You know, while you and I, when we get angry, the anger stays with us, you know, for hours, you know, and I scream at somebody, then anybody else comes in my way, you know, some eki lapat me aja. Everybody who comes, I just yell at them. So they are able to recover faster. Yeah. So I think it's a question of degree. But never, I wouldn't say, at least like I said, you should ask Swamiji when he comes next time. Tapovan Maharaj, yeah. Yeah, because he only wanted sincere students. He said, "When you should listen to me 100% and listen to me once. If you don't get it, you can get out." So he wanted people, when they're sitting, nobody to sleep in his class or attention wander. He was very strict. He said, "I don't care if I have only 3 students." He used to only have sometimes 2, 3, sometimes none. He was fine with it. He said, "Whoever comes has to be sincere. Otherwise, I don't want them." Everybody's different. But yeah, his guru was extremely strict. Yeah, because they had to get it the first time. It was very hard. It was very hard to be his student. That's why nobody went. They ran away. People ran away. Within a month or two, they were gone. Because they said, "I can't take it." But Swami Chinmayananda stayed for many years. And that's why he reached that state of exaltation. Because he was a realized master. Tapovan Maharaj was a very, very evolved soul. But he said, "I don't want too many students. I want selected." And then his student then ultimately spread the message to the whole world, Swami Chinmayananda.
It's like PhD course. You have to have masters before you go to those.
Exactly.
Isn't that meditation means calm your brain and not
yes.
be active?
Right. Not only calm your brain, but then turn your attention to who am I. See, calming the mind is only one part. And most meditation teachers just teach that. You know, do the breathing, do this. But then after you have calmed your mind with observing your breath and relaxing, what do you do with that mind? And that is true meditation, abiding in the self, that I am that. And then staying with that attitude all the time. That is meditation.
What I hear from it, I don't practice meditation. Accepted by the gurus, right. And then you have chance to
right.
improve a lot, I guess.
Right, true. But somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, how long should I meditate every day? And he said 24 hours. So what he means is that in all throughout the day, you should be aware that I am that Brahman, I am that self. I am not Anil, or I am not Dilip or Deepak or Satish, none of those, but I am that consciousness who at this moment is occupying this body, and I have this name, I'm a male or female, I'm Indian, American. So these are all my upadis, these are all my conditionings, but I am that Brahman. So it's that attitude, and secondly, constantly watching your mind. Even when I'm talking, walking, a part of me is observing the mind. That is being in meditation 24 hours. So what we do for half an hour ultimately should become a constant practice. That's what they mean. I mean, you can't all the time be in meditation. Obviously, you have to work. But being aware that I am not this body, that should become a second. Just as now, if somebody wakes you up and tells you, what's your name? You say, my name is Anil, or my name is Satish, or whatever. If somebody wakes you up, they ask you, what's your name? You should say, I'm Brahman. Of course, you know, you can't say that at the ticket counter, at the immigration, you know. They ask you, what is your name? You don't say, I am Brahman. You say, when were you born? I was never born. Are you male or female? I am beyond. No, you can't say that. You have to tell your name.
Right.
He'll give you the visa. Otherwise, he'll kick you out. So, but for vyavaharic purpose, for work, I need this name and form, but actually I am not. So that understanding is called meditation, truly. You had a question?
Whatever happens around you, just be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be in the moment and be observant. Yeah, that's also one of the meditation practices. Yes. So that's what I mean. You know, being aware of the surroundings, being aware of my body, mind, and intellect, being alert. Yes.
So let it wander anywhere.
Right.
And after a long time,
yeah, actually. Again, meditation, as we said, throughout the day, but every day you should take out half or 1 hour to do exclusive meditation. You can't say, I'm going to meditate 24 hours. I have to set aside designated time where I only do think and meditate. And then what you're saying is concentrate on a flame or on a form of the Lord. That is concentration. Meditation is withdrawing the mind's attention from the worldly objects and turning it inward to the self. And that is true meditation, that ultimately that self alone is. So that experience when you get, then everything else you detach. So that is true meditation. There's concentration and then there is meditation. What most people do is concentration. They concentrate on a flame or on the, you know, this Agnya Chakra, or concentrate on the form of, that's very good. I'm not saying those things are bad, form of. But ultimately from the form of the Lord, you should go to the formless, who is everywhere, and including me. I am that. So form, if you think of Krishna or Jesus or Ganpati, that's very good. But then from that, you should say Ganpati is not only the one with the elephant head, but he is the all-pervading. He pervades the whole universe, including me. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhagave. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri.